This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and the story of Art Smith, a 94-year-old Marine Corps veteran who now lives in Escondido, California. Born in Illinois, he grew up in Lansing, Michigan, which is where he happened to be on December 7th, 1941. Everybody seems to remember something, Art, so what do you remember about that day?
Well, I was peddling papers, and I heard the Japanese had hit that island, and that was in the 41 right there at the end. And I graduated from high school right that month later, January 42.
So when those headlines came out, you were the guy standing on the corner with those newspapers trying to sell them?
Well, I had a route. I didn't sell them.
So you were delivering them to each house?
I believe it. The noise was coming all around you. The Japanese have hit Pearl Harbor, you know, early in the morning. And after graduating from high school, I wanted to be a court reporter. But I got a job working for a Nash Galvanator, and it was one that would have kept me out of the service.
Tell me why it would have kept you out of the service. What were they making there that was important to the defense?
Standard propellers. They got into it that quick.
So they were making propellers for the U.S. airplanes.
Yeah.
You could have had an exemption. You're working for a plant producing propellers. You could have stayed there and never gotten into the service.
Right.
What changed?
I got excited. You know, they're all going away, your high school mates and everything. There you are, right in the same town. And I didn't think I was doing enough. So I joined the Marines, and I ended up in San Diego and went through boot camp. Before long, they put me in charge of a Camp Elliott Guard Company. Strange things about that, the bugler that came to Pearl Harbor after Pearl Harbor had played for the deaths of a number of those killed at Pearl Harbor. And they said every time he'd play, he'd bring tears to his eyes. So when at night on Camp Elliott, when I heard that bugler, I'd say he's at it again. He really had his heart into it. And then I had a permanent duty there. I was right there posting the guard, the B-8s and everything else. And I saw them coming back, and some of them Guadalcanal and all that. So I decided I wanted to go, and I put up for where I could have stayed out of that again.
Well, yeah, and let's talk about that. And there was something else I know that happened while you were at Camp Elliott that you have a reminder of over here on a table. There's a photo of a Hollywood starlet, and it's autographed because you danced with her. Who's that, and what happened there?
They told me to get out of your office for a while. And they said, we got somebody who'll take care of you. Go up to Hollywood Canteen. Lo and behold, there's Norma Shearer, who was a Hollywood Oscar winner. And she danced with me. I've got a picture looking at her right now. But the thing is, they had high school girls, too. And I can remember a young blonde. She said, would you come back and be in my high school class? I was a young man, and I said, I can't make it back again, but I wish you well.
So you mentioned you're there at Camp Elliott, and you see the Marines coming back from these early Pacific battles. You mentioned Guadalcanal. These are guys who are carrying physical wounds, mental and emotional wounds. What was it about seeing them that made you want to go over there? Because some people might be inclined not to want to go once they see that.
You can't believe what they went through. They all might have malaria and everything else, and they're sick. Malaria was a bad thing. But I don't know. I thought I could do something better. Why? An excitement. I'm young. I'm not married, and nobody's responsible. So I went off.
Because you could have, just like before, you could have stayed at your factory job.
I had a job there, being in charge of that Camp Elliott, where I could have stayed on.
So you said, I don't want this base job anymore. I want to go fight.
I wanted to be in the action and everything else, and assist if I could. I didn't plan to be any hero or anything, but there were so many things where you could help. Of course, we circled Guam for 30 days, and the Red Cross said my mother was looking for me, and I said, I can't get back to her because we're circling Guam. And then we went down the rope ladders and in the Higgins boats, and you wonder when you got ashore, if you're going to get ashore, whether the waters are too deep when they let their front down. Ships were firing over our heads, and it was like all hell broke loose. Excuse the words. And the funny part about it, I was in this hotel, and the guy walked up, and he says, you're Art Smith? I says, yeah. You were on Guam? I says, yeah. He says, I was with the artillery behind you. And I said, you son of a gun, you kept me awake all night long far enough. He says, we got the operation open for you. you know, to go ahead. I say, I'm laying in a foxhole and you're doing all that. But the thing is, I'd studied to be a court reporter, and they heard about this, and I ended up, would you believe, with an island commander, two-star general.
Well, that was quite a journey, and I want to hear about it. But you just mentioned that initial landing there at Guam. Were you scared? Were you nervous?
Well, I was afraid if they dropped that front end down with all the equipment on, helmets and weapons and backpacks, and you'd go right down the bottom. But they didn't. They went right ashore.
And what greeted you as you came ashore?
A lot of fireback. If you could see, we got a medal for, what you'd call it, a medal, by the Secretary of the Navy. The 1st Provisional Marine Brigade went through swamps and everything else, and made it through to the end. And something you'll never forget.
And I'm interested in what your mindset was going into that. I mean, I know you're a young man. You're probably just short of your 21st birthday, right?
Right.
Before you landed on Guam, did you think that this might be the last thing you ever did? Did you think that?
No, I didn't think I did. I said, we're going to do it. I don't know. Something about joining the Marines, they don't have really any letdowns. You're taught to go ahead and do the best you can. And you can tell by that Secretary of the Navy when he wrote that medal for us.
Distinguished Unit Citation?
Yeah. That we had a determined operation to do. I mean, we laid in foxholes at nights, and I hate to talk about, you know, friends that aren't with us anymore, but they were part of the group that went through. And I honor them very much.
Well, that's the reality. People did die, and there were some close calls for you. And as you came ashore there, can you give us a sense for what you were armed with and what you understood your duties to be when you first got there?
We had backpacks and pickaxes and everything else, and I had an M1 rifle. I'd like to think I was trained well in that, because I remember lying beside one fella, and I remember he worked for a store in Florida, and he had a wife and two children who left them. And he's lying down in the foxhole with me, and he started firing away. And I said, don't do that, don't do that. He says, I thought I saw some action there. I said, you're telling them where you are. And so he quieted him down. But things got better. We had a good backing.
But it wasn't easy. I imagine those days had to be long days and exhausting days, and maybe at times terrifying days.
Yeah, but when we got further on there, they started put up tents, and I laid in my cot one night, and Norma Shearer was singing, I'll Be Seeing You. And it brought tears to my eyes when you hear, I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day through. In that small cafe, the park across the way, the children's carousel, the wishing well. I'll be seeing you in every lovely summer's day and everything that's bright and gay. I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you. You just felt like you were part of the group again.
So hearing a song like that overseas reminded you of home, made you feel like you're not alone?
Yeah.
I'm sure there are a lot of things that you endured, but what was it like to sleep in a foxhole?
Well, you kind of wonder what's it. You're overrun by toads about that time. When we rode the jeeps, so you kind of flattened them out. So then you never knew what was going to crawl into your foxhole with you.
You mentioned those toads. Like, how many toads?
I never counted them. I just pushed them out. They were all over the island at one time. And the jeeps, you'd run over them. But it's all cleared off. Now it's beautiful now. And that's where we landed at Agates. They say it's a very great place to go. And they've made a memorial cemetery for those that didn't make it. And it's beautiful, too. This is what I heard from people that just returned a week ago. I'd like to go back, see myself.
Did you lose some friends over there? Did guys that you knew that you served with not make it out of there?
Well, I'd rather not get to that, but I do remember when they started put up tents that there was one officer, he just got married, and all of a sudden there was a big whoosh, And we found out later that he had Japanese fuses, it looks. And I rushed over to him, and I don't want to mention any names or anything. But I said, "You're so-and-so," and he says, "Yes." But he never made it, so.
There was an explosion because something was sabotaged, or?
No, he just working with some fuses, they said, Japanese fuses. And they went off, and it was a big, massive shot of flame went up in the air. I just wonder it didn't burn the tent down.
I just want people to get a sense of what this was like, because none of us were there. We didn't live through it. What was the most challenging part? Or the most difficult part of being part of that invasion force and recapturing Guam all the time that you were there? What was the most difficult thing?
I don't think being a Marine was. It was just getting it over with and stopping all this death and everything else. And then, you know what? Some mother's going to get a letter. And that was the hardest part, you know. You're making it, hopefully, but you just try to do the best you can.
Did you ever think you weren't going to make it?
Never thought that. I mean, you know, I had the weapons to do it, and if a shot from someplace else, like a sniper in a palm tree, took aim at me when I was driving a Jeep up, and I had a lieutenant colonel in the back seat. The shot hit my helmet and creased it and took out my windshield. It's about a half inch more in my helmet, and it would have gone into my head. But they went back to take care of that.
So it hits your helmet, it shatters the windshield, and you just said, you know, very matter-of-factly, if it was a little half-inch different, that it would have gone into your head. You wouldn't be here. Your son would have never been born. What does that do to you when you realize that you just almost got killed?
Well, it's something you didn't think would happen. All of a sudden, it's just a massive crash in your window, and then you realize your helmet had been hit. And then you tell them that someone has to go back. And when that's what I did, I drove across fields like it was running out of gas. And they told them you need some help back there. But you never know what it could be. It could, other times it could have got me too.
So the Jeep was running out of gas? Is that what you just said?
No, I'm just saying I drove that car Jeep so fast.
You wanted to get out of there.
I wanted to get out of there.
Well, that's one close call you endured. There's another reminder of a close call that sits prominently here where you live in a big glass case. There's a Japanese samurai sword. Where did that come from? How did you become the owner of that?
Well, I don't really want to go into that. I just rather leave it out. It's history.
Well, and I won't twist your arm, and it's your story, not mine. But I think it underscores the reality that you're here, but you almost weren't here. And if you don't survive, you don't meet your wife, your son isn't born. And the reason you have that samurai sword is because the person you took it from was trying to kill you in the middle of the night.
I'd rather not get into it.
Is there anything you want to say about that sword? What it means to you or what you think of when you look at it?
Well, it's just part of history.
Maybe let's look at it this way. Can you help us understand the different dangers that you faced as a Marine on Guam? You mentioned when you saw the guys coming back from Guadalcanal, a lot of them had malaria. There are diseases that you could encounter on Guam, I'm sure. And there are probably a lot of the ways that the enemy could get you. What were the different things that you had to watch out for as far as the enemy was concerned?
You know, in combat, you just take the best and hope your mind is doing the right. You can go wrong or right, or left. You should have gone left. Or when you got weapons flying over your head, like, take a look at that. Maybe you ought to read a little bit about from that Secretary of the Navy wrote about us. That tells the whole true story. You know, where we went through marshes and never turned back and kept going. Secretary of the Navy outlines it better in writing than I could. If you read a little bit of that, it would tell you that it was nothing to be around if you could get out of it.
You asked me to read it, I'll read it. This is from the Secretary of the Navy, James Forrestal. It's a Navy unit commendation awarded to the 1st Provisional Marine Brigade for outstanding heroism in action against enemy Japanese forces during the invasion of Guam, Marianas Islands, from July 21 to August 10, 1944. Functioning as a combat unit for the first time, the 1st Provisional Marine Brigade forced a landing against strong hostile defenses and well-camouflaged positions, steadily advancing inland under the relentless fury of the enemy's heavy artillery, mortar, and small arms fire to secure a firm beachhead by nightfall. Executing a difficult turning movement to the north, this daring and courageous unit fought its way ahead yard by yard through mangrove swamps, dense jungles, and over cliffs, and although terrifically reduced in strength under the enemy's fanatical counterattacks, hunted the Japanese in caves, pillboxes, and foxholes, and exterminated them. By their individual acts of gallantry and their indomitable fighting teamwork throughout this bitter and costly struggle, the men of the 1st Provisional Marine Brigade aided immeasurably in the restoration of Guam to our sovereignty. It's pretty superlative there, what he's saying about you guys. And it talks about that first night.
Yeah, he tells it better than what I could. I mean, he's got it down pat.
And that sounds like what you experienced?
That's right. We were in the mud and everything else like you talk.
On that first night, you were able to secure that beachhead by the end of the night. But that must not have been easy to do that.
The Marines train you very, very well. And you do the best you can. And we did go through heck, but I think he's got it covered.
Can you help us understand what that feels like to be in a situation like that?
Yeah. It's like on a 4th of July night and you got a lot of firecrackers and they're going out all around you.
And you don't know if one of them's got your name on it.
That's right.
Well, and then this mentions, I was asking you about the different things you encountered. This mentions some of it right off the bat, even that first day as you're landing. He called it strong hostile defenses, well-camouflaged positions, and he said you faced heavy artillery, mortar, and small arms fire. So it could be coming straight at you. It could be raining down from the sky.
That's right.
How close did some of that come to you?
Well, I'm lucky I missed it. They missed me. That's all. It's all around you. I mean, it lit up the sky. I don't know what else I can say.
Later on, you have the one ricochet off your helmet. But in this case, is stuff land?
That was different. When I was taking somebody up, they still were in the palm trees and around you trying to take shots at you.
But during this initial landing and that night as you're establishing the beachhead, are there enemy rounds that are coming within a few feet of you?
They could be, yes. Well, sure they did. Yeah. I was lucky they missed me when you read that.
You're saying that you're lucky they missed you, and you're seeing, as this is unfolding, you're seeing other guys that it's not missing, that they're getting hit and they're going down.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
But that was the reality, right?
That's right. If you see it, you don't like it.
And don't you...
pretend to be a hero. I just happen to be there.
Well, and I'm not trying to make you into anything you're not. When you see that Marine who's 100 yards away or 10 yards away or 10 feet away going down, doesn't it occur to you, that could be me? I could be next?
You don't think of it that way. You just, if you stop to think about it, you're going to get it. So you just got to keep firing. And I can't believe all those things happen and how I ended up with a 2-star general.
General Henry Larson would become the first post-war governor of Guam, but how did Art Smith end up spending so much time with him? What was Art doing, and how did that change things for a young Marine? We'll find out when we come back. Don't forget to pull up the photos and video at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.